Welcome back to UGA BCM Unscripted. On Monday night, we heard from Pastor Shane from, Maysville. I just about lost my mind there.
Wow.
Sorry about that, Shane. From Maysville, and just did a tremendous job sharing about just the importance of what Jesus said about sharing our faith and about evangelism and just his view of the lost. And so we just kind of want to dive into that a little bit more, kind of stay on that same topic today, and have a conversation about just on-campus evangelism. What we've seen here at the University of Georgia, some of the things that we do. If you're listening to this and you're in another campus ministry, it might be useful just to hear some of the things that we do that we found to be effective. I also think it's fitting to have this conversation in light of Cliff and Stuart being on campus this past week and just the sort of apologetic route that they took and the amount of people that they had, not just on campus, but I mean, there was like over 2,000 students at Athens Church on Tuesday night. And so that's kind of how we'll start this conversation. I think to sort of set some, not parameters, but set sort of a foundation for the conversation, let's start with talking about what do we do as a BCM on campus from an evangelism standpoint and how that plays out sort of in our weekly ministry. And so, I don't know, Carson or Tyler, either one of you can start, and we'll just kind of bounce off each other talking about some of the things that we do on campus to share the gospel and connect with students.
Yeah, I would say that our campus evangelism strategy really kind of divides itself naturally into three different aspects, one of which is our intentional 2x2 evangelism. So that's at the end of each month, and I think once on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so
right.
Ultimately twice a month, we pair up and try to strike up conversations with students, whether that be in a dining hall or just students that are sitting around outside doing homework or staring at the sky or something like
right,
that.
Right.
And so there's those kind of conversations. There's also our tabling strategy, which usually involves whiteboarding, but we've also seen good conversations come out of giving away energy drinks, for example. So something that that we have done in the past, which is tabling, that really didn't see a ton of engagement and fruit, I think has really been quite profitable for us up to this point this year. And then the last part of that is just going to be personal conversations, whether that's staff meeting with students or our exec team meeting with students, or all the, you know, kind of one-off conversations that we get to hear about
right.
from our leadership team that they post in our gospel conversations group me. So, what I like about particularly that last one is that it's very like lifestyle centered. You know,
yes.
Evangelism is a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It's not just a program thing, although program things are helpful. I'm really encouraged by the students that maybe can't make it to the 2x2 events also
right.
being faithful and sharing their faith.
So. And this semester we've seen seven students come to know Christ this semester, which has been really awesome. And it's been a little bit of all of those, right? So we had a girl this last week that was, you know, one of the things that we do, we're very intentional about making sure that we give a gospel presentation on all of our Monday nights, whether that's us or a guest speaker, and giving students an opportunity to respond. And so, you know, we had a girl get saved just this last week during that. We also have had, we had a student after welcome week that had been meeting with some, like, I know that we had the cookout out there on the top of the lawn up there above Memorial Hall. And we look over there and there's like three guys sitting with this guy and on the stairs and talking to him. And come to find out a couple weeks later, I get a message from one of our college pastors that they had led this kid to Christ. And he was getting baptized in one of our local churches. And then, you know, through those gospel appointments, those one-on-one conversations that you were talking about, had a young man that I met with after coming to some of our Welcome Week stuff and shared the gospel with him. He said he wasn't really ready in that moment to accept Christ. And then he comes up to us before a gathering service and says, "Hey, Tommy, can I talk to you?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And so I walk around the corner to talk to him and I say, "Hey, what do you want to talk about?" And he goes, "I'm ready." And so, you know, that's like 3 weeks later, like after the fact, right? And he's like, hey, I'm ready. And he prays and receives Christ right then and there. And so we've seen some fruit from all of those types of things that I think we've done this year. You know, I tell students, or students, I tell other campus ministers and even college pastors that I think that one of the dangers in, like, when we talk about evangelism strategies is we feel like we have to choose one. Like, we have to choose one evangelism strategy. And I don't know that that plays out real well. Because ultimately what we're trying to do is create a culture of evangelism. We're trying to create something where people will continue to share their faith. And so we want to create environments that make that easy and or that sometimes force them to. But we also, through like programming and stuff, but we also want it to become more than that. And so, Carson, I mean, what have you seen this semester and how that's played out?
Yeah, it's been really cool. Students have, I feel like we've seen a lot of freshmen start doing evangelism, especially like 2x2 or leveraging our whiteboarding time during tabling. But it's been cool, specifically freshmen that are like already filling out a call to ministry, or maybe they're wanting to do something over the summer, maybe they're wanting to go on a spring break trip. A lot of students, especially like students who are going on the London trip, they have come up to me, asked me what it's like what does evangelism look like out there? And they've said like, okay, well, I'm gonna come to 2x2, or I'm gonna come, I can't do this during my class time, but I'm gonna come at this point, or like me and a friend are gonna go out at a different time. Like, and all those things are so great. And so that's been really cool to see and get to share with them my experience over there, and kind of seeing how that has translated over here, those conversations. Right. But getting to help encourage those students to share their faith here on campus in preparation for ministry and missions and things that the Lord has planned for them. So that's been really cool. And then what, I don't know if we already mentioned this, but we had what, like over 12 at 2x2 the other day?
Yeah, we had the most. Typically when we do 2x2, we'll have a handful of students that show up, right? And it's not always the same students. Like sometimes it rotates, but it's typically a fairly smaller group, so we'll send out like 2 or 3 groups to hit different places on campus. And the other day, I think we sent out like 6 groups or 7 groups. It was a bunch of groups we sent out.
And like students came in between that too. Yes. Like more students came after their class got out or whatever. Like there were more that I met up with. So that was really cool to see. Yeah. And we had a lot of really good conversations.
Yeah, and it was cool. I think like I had went back into Tate after we had met with a couple of students, and actually tried to meet with 3 students. One student was like, no, not having this conversation. One student we had an amazing conversation with sitting down like outside the Chick-fil-A at Tate. And then another student we met with, had a good conversation, but kind of went down some interesting doctrinal theological rabbit trails. He was a kid that grew up in the Catholic Church and devout, quote unquote, devout Catholic. And so he wanted to ask a lot of those types of questions. So we kept trying to point the conversation back to Jesus. Right. And so anyways, what was cool was like after that, and I think you were there, Carson, like I'd walked back.
Yeah,
in.
We were talking about it.
Yeah. I'd walked back in. I was really just trying to go to the bathroom before I got in my car to leave campus.
But you ran into like 5 of us.
And there was like a bunch of, like, we all ran into each other in that hallway in Tate and started talking about the conversations that we'd had. And that was really encouraging. Let's talk a little bit, I think, about the difference between programming evangelism and establishing a culture of evangelism and how that plays out. And I'll start that conversation. We've tried to do some things, I think, as a ministry to establish a culture of evangelism rather than just like programming. And some of that, I think, comes from, like, I experienced that in the church world. You know, a lot of times in the church world, if you talk to a church that talks about being strong in evangelism, a lot of times what they're going to do when they say that is they're going to reference programs they've done, right? They're going to reference the programs where you meet and you train and then you go out and then you share, like you go through this study, or it's like, you know, we're constantly doing these different studies, and there's a bunch of them out there that can do, and they're good and they're great. So I'm not saying don't do them. However, my former pastor, actually here at Beach Haven, Dr. Mills, he used to say all the time that the end goal is not to just stack programs on top of programs that sort of force your people to go out and share, but the end goal is to get people to where they're sharing in whatever context they're in on a daily basis. And so for us, we made a strategic move this year. In the past, we've pushed our students towards Great Exchange a lot. And I got nothing but great things to say about Great Exchange. I think sometimes we've sort of really been heavy on the programming. This year, we sort of shifted that a little bit. Let's talk about that. So for example, one of the things we did is at the end of, or toward the second semester last year, we created a group me, gospel conversations. And so mm-hmm. talk about what does that group me and how does that play out? How does that help establish culture?
Yeah. It's really cool because originally when we did it last year, I think it was mainly conversations coming from 2x2 and like big conversations from the programmed, events that we had, which is cool, really cool to see. Great, right. We get to hear about each other's conversations. Awesome.
But the problem is, a lot of times that ends up being a staff member,
yeah,
or an exec team member,
yeah.
The team lead for evangelism.
Right, exactly, yes. Exactly. And so recently, I've noticed at least, because I don't record every conversation I have in there, right. You know. But I've noticed people saying like, oh, I got to share the gospel with my friend in class, or yes. and pray for this person, and she wants to meet up, and I'm gonna give her this book, or we ran into this guy on the bus, and he commented on my BCM shirt, and I got to share the gospel with him, like those types of things that we're seeing in the GroupMe especially, and hearing just by like word of mouth. Oh, I had this conversation, whatever. That has been really cool to see, and I feel like it does. I mean, that is the culture of evangelism that we're trying to foster.
I noticed something the other day when we were tabling. So, you know, sometimes we'll ask a very specific, like it's very clear, like when you go to answer it, this is a spiritual question, right? Like mm-hmm. on the whiteboard. The other day we asked one that was more of a leading question. It was like, what's your favorite gift you've ever received, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was sitting there at the table and I actually was talking to another student, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw two of our guys talking to another guy, mm-hmm. and I actually looked at you and went, shh,
yeah, person, I was,
shh.
I was
you didn't
laughing.
Know why I was shushing you, I don't think.
No, I didn't realize, yeah. But then I looked around and I was like, yeah. we were talking about the beach, and yes. I was like being really loud.
Yeah, yeah, and I was like, oh, we can still talk about this, but I'm trying to like eavesdrop, because I wanted to hear how our guys were doing, right? Yeah. I didn't want to jump into the conversation, but it was really awesome hearing them transition the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we've gotten better at.
Oh, yeah.
And I think part of that is establishing like that culture, right? Like the fact that you want to get to the point, we talk about gospel appointments, right? Like where that, you know, a lot of times it's just in the past, it's just staff members who are like taking kids to coffee. It's just us. Like we're like, hey, new kids come in, we're taking kids to coffee. And if a ton of new kids come in at one time, then we're asking our president, asking some of our team leads, our exec team or whatever, hey, can you help with these people, et cetera. And it's been cool to see, even on like the spreadsheet where we keep up with all the new students that come in, that more of our students are asking people to coffee or lunch, and hearing the conversations about more of them taking small group members, et cetera, to lunch. And so mm-hmm. I think that's gone a long way as well. Tyler, you got anything to add in that?
Yeah, for sure. I like to think about it like a sports analogy. I played baseball, and so anyway, the way I see it is that the programmed activities that we do is kind of like practice.
Yeah.
And you're getting reps.
That's
you know,
right.
You're doing something, and so that when you find yourself in a conversation that you might think, oh, that's a trigger to turn this to something spiritual.
That's right.
Your instincts kind of take over
mm-hmm.
from the practice
yep.
that you've done. And all of a sudden you're in there and you're sharing the gospel with
yeah,
the guy
good.
5 minutes before class starts. I mean, this is kind of a crazy thing, but I was sitting in a class 2 weeks ago. So I'm still a student, and it was a financial derivatives class. So we're getting ready to do a bunch of hard math. A guy that sits at my little pod ask what I thought about the Israel-Palestine conflict.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, exciting. Oh, well, that's a fun, light question to get us started with.
Yeah.
And he comes from a Muslim background, and I've really tried to be intentional with him. But even in that conversation, I got to kind of give him a you know, kind of tampered opinion.
Right,
enough to satisfy his asking. But then also say that, hey, like, this war is evidence of a fallen world. And there's no perfect solution outside the person of Jesus.
Right.
You know, and I know that we disagree on maybe who the person of Jesus is, right? But I think that he's the person that is actually the solution to the world's problems.
Right.
And so it's just little things like that. I had no idea that was about to happen. I was trying to eat a Nuke's Q, as a matter of fact, before that class started. But it's just like, oh, it's instinctual.
Yeah.
You know, like I could have dodged that question and be like, oh, you know, I don't really have any opinions, you know, which y'all know is not true because I've got opinions on everything. But that's just kind of, I think, a product and what we've seen, not just with me, but with all our students.
Yeah.
Is that, yes, we've done some programming, we've done some training, and I think it's been a lot more practical.
Yeah.
Because in the past, I don't want to ramble too long about this, but in the past, it feels like our training has been very specific to 2x2.
Correct.
And hey, when you're doing something in a you know 2x2 setting, you're trying to strike up a conversation with a random dude, here's how you can pivot that conversation to the gospel.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great.
Right.
I think that's really helpful. But I think our training this year has been a lot more focused on, yeah, that might work for 2x2, but here's how you can pivot that conversation to the gospel when you're talking with somebody in a class or, you know, like on an IM field. Barrett was telling me about a gospel conversation he had on his IM football team. And so just the everyday moments like that, I think we've been a lot better at this year.
Yeah, one of the things that we did, and I'll give David Williams down in Valdosta a shout out for this, is that we used the training that they did for how they do their 2x2 with our leadership this year. And one of the things about what David does is that he makes it a point in his training, and we try to do the same thing, to explain that the most important thing you can do is get to the gospel as fast as you can. Right? Like, you want to try to get to the gospel as fast as you can. And to be, and so I think that in itself, like, translates a little bit to thinking about when you're having random, like, general conversations, to see them as potential spiritual conversations. And when it spins, in your back of your mind, you're thinking, okay, I got to get the gospel as fast as I can, right? And then you let the gospel do what the gospel does. And so I think that's been beneficial, because I think the other thing that we emphasize this year is that, like, it's okay to ask difficult spiritual questions on a college campus. Like, that's okay to do. It's okay to ask somebody, hey, so what's your spiritual background? Right? Or it's okay to ask somebody, well, tell me what you believe. Right? Like, those are okay questions to ask. And you don't have to have, like, a survey in your hand to ask those questions. And so, you know, I think one of the things at UGA that's been hard the past few years is that we've been really good. And when I say we, I mean campus ministries in general and churches in general. We've been really good at doing the programmed stuff. And like I said, nothing negative about Great Exchange at all. It's an amazing program. But, like, we've experienced that, and I've heard Great Exchange people tell me this, situations where that as soon as that tent pops up, right, as soon as they see you standing there with a card in your hand, like, they'll walk around to a void.
Yeah.
Like, they'll literally walk around to a void. And so it becomes harder to have those conversations. And so one of the things we tried to do this year is, and I think this helps actually in students being willing to talk to people on their own, is that we've taken the cards out of people's hands. So we've said, we're going to go do something similar to what we did on a Great Exchange. But I'll never forget the first time we did it this year, me and Sean McMeans, I was like, Sean, you want to go with me? And he was like, sure. And so we walked around Tate to the front, because, you know, people like sit on those, like, those walls around the front of Tate. Typically, the other day I walked around Tate, nobody was there. I walked around with Jackson Avery, and I was like, nobody's here. So then we went inside and had a great conversation, right? But that day I walked with Sean around the Tate to the front of Tate, knowing that we'd probably find somebody sitting on that wall by themselves. And sure enough, there's a guy sitting on the wall by himself. And Sean was like, well, we're gonna see how this goes. And so we walked up to him, and it was just like, hey, man, how you doing? You doing all right? Having a good day? And this guy was like, yeah. And we told him our name. We were like, well, what's your name? And he tells us his name. And, like, at that point, like, we're having a conversation with the guy, right? It's hard. Like, we were being nice, and so he sort of had to be nice back. Mm-hmm. and it struck up a conversation, and so we were able to share the gospel. And this kid was already a believer and so forth. But, you know, Sean made a comment to me. He's like, well, that was easier than I thought it was going to be, right? Because we actually, like, we were just being nice, Like, we were literally just being nice to a guy. And same situation with when Jackson and I sat down that day at lunch a couple weeks ago with a young man, and Jackson ended up getting his contact information and so forth. But we just sat down and said, hey, anybody sitting here? Can we sit here? We're just being nice, mm-hmm. right? And so I think sometimes if you can get to a point where you can start transitioning like to where the programming is more natural, then it's going to give students a lot more confidence in their daily lives as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because it's so, I mean, you keep saying like, oh, it's just being nice, which is true. And not that being nice is counter to like our society today, but just going up to someone and talking to them and striking up a conversation to someone random, like that is counter to our culture today, especially amongst college students. Like, they just don't do that.
Right.
Like if you just stop and you look around, everyone has their head in their phone.
Right.
Everyone.
Yeah.
So it is counter and it's uncomfortable because that's not what college students are used to doing. They're not used to, like, we don't even knock on people's door anymore.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? So yeah, people think you're crazy if you just go up to them and talk to them. So it's just counter. So I agree. Like, having these program times, like to what Tyler was saying, it makes it more natural in your daily life because you've already done it. And you realize it's like, oh, this is just a natural conversation. I'm just being nice. I'm just talking. It's not as, I don't know, so hyped up, I guess. Right.
And I also realized I left Andrew out. Andrew was with us too. So sorry, Andrew. It wasn't just Jackson. I forget. Yes, you were with us too. So anyways, yeah, go ahead.
Well,
you're about to say something.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of pose a question back at you, Tommy, kind of the piece that you mentioned.
Right.
But I want to look at maybe a little bit deeper is presenting the gospel every week at Gathering.
Yeah.
We've seen tremendous fruit
mm-hmm.
from regular gospel invitations at Gathering. Mm-hmm. And I'm really encouraged by that. You know, even the night I preached, gave an invitation and people responded. I'm like,
right.
What?
Yeah.
You know, to me, and you can speak to this, you've preached way more than I have, but it seemed like I'm just up there, you know, sharing what's on my heart, and the Lord's doing work out
That's right.
in the congregation that I have no idea what's going on.
Right.
You know? And I think a lot of times with the 2x2 and these intentional conversations, it can really be like, oh, like we're programming this, we're trying to pivot these conversations. But from a preaching perspective, it's just like I'm declaring the word of God and leaving it up to the Lord for what he's going to do. And so, like, just how important is it to, you know, maintain a commitment to giving a gospel invitation every week?
Man, that's a softball. Yeah, so, you know, it breaks my heart that more churches are getting away from giving a gospel invitation at the end of services. It really does. Matter of fact, we've got an emphasis across the state of Georgia that's coming out in the next year through the Georgia Baptist Mission Board. That's an evangelism emphasis about just sharing the gospel. We want to share the gospel with every single person in the state of Georgia. And I don't know if this is public knowledge yet or not, so I hope I don't get my hand slapped by my bosses. But you asked the question, so I have to answer it. I haven't seen the statistics yet, but we worked with Lifeway on doing a study related to an intentional gospel invitation at the end of services and how that relates statistically to people getting saved. And all I'll say is it doesn't take much more than common sense to know what those results are going to be. I don't think they've been released yet, so I don't want to speak to what they are. But what I will say is this, is that I think two things, actually a lot more than two things. This is a rabbit trail, so I want to try to be as precise as I can. Number one, COVID was terrible for an intentional invitation. We had legitimate health reasons and fear and all those different things that caused churches to get away from giving invitations at the end of a service. Number two, because of particular leanings of particular doctrines, there tends to be a fear of like false converts. There also tends to be this fear of revivalism. And you're hearing my heart on this if you're listening to this. If we, this is Tommyology. But I believe it's based in biblical theology. If we believe that the Holy Spirit is who does the work in a person's heart and life, and that the gospel is what changes a person's life, I don't understand why we're fearful of, like, false converts. And I don't understand why we're fearful of, like, you know, if somebody says that they made a decision to accept Christ and, like, they may not have really. That's between them and God. And we have to trust the Holy Spirit doing a work in that person's life. And the problem is that we've been called to proclaim the gospel. And the problem is that you can't assume that there's not a lost person sitting in a crowd somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so for us at the BCM, we're going to give every single Monday night an opportunity for people to respond to the gospel. That may look different in different ways. It may be that we give people an opportunity to pray right where they're at. It may be that we tell people to find someone at the end of the service to talk to. It may be that, you know, we in the past, we've stuck a phone number up on the screen and said, hey, text us if you've got questions, etc. And I understand the different ways and methods. My brother's church and my dad's church even. My dad tells me that at their church, they get more response from people shooting text messages to them after the services or leaving cards in their seats where they've made a decision in their seat than they do even of people like coming forward, right? And that's the culture we live in today. And so I understand that. Dr. Jerry Vines, who's one of the greatest like preachers and soul winners ever, like he says that like churches should have multiple ways of giving people an opportunity to respond to the gospel now, right? And so I don't think that you can say, oh, it's got to look exactly like this, or, you know, oh, or, you know, we should never do a hand raise thing, or we should never do like a opportunity for people to pray in their seats. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that you preach so that there is a response, right? We don't preach just to give a bunch of academic knowledge. We preach for what reason? We preach because we are proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ. We're proclaiming his word, and it's supposed to do something to people's hearts. It's supposed to do something to people's minds. And if that's the case, we have to give people an opportunity to respond. If we're not giving people an opportunity to respond, we're not preaching the message. Like, we're not. Like, and if you're listening to this and that offends, I'm sorry. But if you're preaching and you're not giving people an opportunity to respond, you're not preaching a sermon. Mm. You're reading an essay. Like, you can do that in a seminary class. And so I think that one of the reasons that we have a hard time, the other thing is this, I think one of the reasons that we have a hard time in today's world with people sharing the gospel in a one-on-one setting is they also don't see that example on a weekly basis from our pulpits. Mm. Like, I learned how to share the gospel because literally every single Sunday I heard my dad stand up and at the end of his sermon, share the gospel. I didn't memorize the Romans Road because, like, I mean, seriously, right. I didn't right. memorize the Romans Road because, like, I was given a book and told to study it. I memorized the Romans Road because I heard it literally every single Sunday.
Right.
Right? Like, we got kids now that don't know John 3:16 because they've never heard their preacher say it from a pulpit. And so that's a rabbit to chase. If nothing else, you know my heart for evangelism and you know my heart for sharing the gospel. Mm-hmm. So we're going to always do that. I had somebody ask me one time, they said, Tommy, do you view your Monday nights as an evangelistic service? Do you actually see people come to know Christ during those Monday nights? And it was a local pastor. And I said, yeah, we do. Like, we do. And so, I don't know. So for our churches in the area, for our pastors in the area, I don't know if they listen to this or not, but what I would say is for our guys in our ministry that listen to this, they're going into the ministry, I don't care what your churches have done in the past. Like, my encouragement would be, do not forsake an opportunity for people to come to know Christ in a service. Don't do that. That just doesn't make any sense. It makes no sense for people to not have an opportunity to respond. And I mean, I'll be honest with you. I've visited churches before where I've said, where I've loved everything about them. And I've said, our family's not coming back here because they don't give a gospel presentation at the end of the service. Mm. And that's a conviction I have. I know people are in different places on that. But it's not preaching if you're not giving people an opportunity to respond to what the Holy Spirit's doing in their life. Mm. there's got to be some call. There's got to be some call. So anyways, that's my take on it. And so that's why we're going to do it on Monday nights. And that's why I think God's honored that and he's seen people get saved.
Right.
I'll also say this. See if y'all remember this. I told y'all both this not long ago. About how that sometimes like cold evangelism is really hard. Like the whole like just walking up to somebody, like back in the day, like going and knocking on doors on a Saturday and all that stuff. Y'all remember when I told y'all that I had a pastor that told me that he believes that God honors that and it shows up fruit in different ways?
Right.
Do y'all, I mean, I feel like we've seen that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the last 2 years in particular, we've seen that. Like, the more emphasis we've put on doing that, the more we've seen. I haven't asked David Williams this at Valdosta State, but I need to. They had over 100 students last year come to know Christ as Lord and Savior, made some sort of profession of faith.
Mm-hmm.
I have a strong feeling that not all 100 of those were done through their own campus, like, cold evangelism strategy.
Yeah.
Right.
Right? Yeah. But, like, when you emphasize evangelism, it shows up in other ways.
Yeah.
The fruit shows up in other ways.
And in ways that you don't expect it.
Yes.
And if somebody comes up to you before gathering.
Yes.
And, and says, I want to get saved. You're like, what? We haven't even started the preaching yet.
It's like, I'm about to talk about politics tonight. And you want to get saved right now? Can you wait till next week? Like, you know? Like,
right. Yeah. Or, like, at 8:30 in the morning at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Like, the craziest things.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
The Lord honors that. And we're on a... We're on a campus and we're living within a time and within at least a culture amongst college students where students are hungry.
Yeah.
And I was listening to an interview that Ray Comfort did actually on some morning news show.
Right.
And could have been Fox and Friends. I don't know. But anyway, but he was talking about doing an evangelistic outreach on a campus out in California. And he was saying that, you know, now more than ever, he's able to appeal to the conscience, whereas, you know, a lot of people are looking to evangelize, appealing to the intellect.
Yeah.
And we saw that, you know, this week with Cliff and Stuart, and that's great.
Right, right.
But I do think that we're in kind of a unique scenario on college campuses where we're able to appeal to that conscience a little bit more than you were in the past. And maybe that's due to recent events. Maybe it's, I mean, certainly it's a work of the Holy Spirit, right?
Right.
But people are, I think, more aware nowadays of the presence of sin, certainly in the world more broadly, but even in their own life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a wonderful opportunity for us to get to preach the truth of the gospel into that and say that there's redemption, you know, for that sin.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think the students are more aware of that nowadays than ever before. And so I'm really encouraged by that.
Yeah. Hey, one last thing that I think I want to point out here is that I think there's a myth out there about like relational evangelism versus like cold evangelism, right?
That's good.
And for some reason, people have like picked sides, like they're in different corners of like a boxing ring, right? I heard a guy say, I mean, this is a NAM church planner, say one time that you shouldn't share the gospel with somebody until you've earned the relational equity and right to do that. And he was coming from a place of saying that Jesus took care of like physical needs and so forth, and then he would share the spiritual needs. But I was like, that's crazy to me, right? Like, that's absolutely crazy to me. One, we can go to examples in the Bible, right? Where Jesus pointedly like shares the gospel, where Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch, like Philip doesn't go, well, hey, let's go hang out together for a few weeks before I share the gospel with you, right? Like, no, that's not what he does. On the flip side, there are people that are so scared of relational evangelism that they are like anti that too. And, you know, they create this boogeyman of like, oh, well, all relational evangelism does is just create more friends and then you never share and et cetera. And I think that's true sometimes. Like, don't get me wrong. I think that's true sometimes. And I think on the flip side of that though, you also have people who legitimately will only share in a one-on-one, like, cold turkey sort of setting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good either. And so the other thing I think I would encourage people to do is to recognize that that evangelism is not, like, a sniper approach. It's a shotgun approach. right? Like evangelism. I don't know how else to say it. Like
it was just funny.
Carson's laughing at me. But like evangelism should not be just a one size fits all approach. Evangelism has to be anything and everything that you can use within the context of where you're at. And so sometimes it is that person that it takes a while that you've worked with and that you've built a relationship with, right? Like the guy that came to know Christ before the service the other week, like I would say most people would define that as relational evangelism in the sense that like we as a BCM built a relationship with a young man. He started coming to our small groups, et cetera, and then he accepted Christ a few weeks later. But on the flip side of that, it was also spontaneous evangelism in the fact that I set up a gospel appointment with him. And in that gospel appointment, within 15 minutes of us eating tacos, I think that's what we ate that day, was tacos, right? What better place to share Jesus than Tacos Los Plebes, is that I shared the gospel.
Right.
Like I didn't say I'm going to wait 3 weeks to share. I shared the gospel, right? And then I saw him a couple weeks later, like walking on campus. And I was like, hey, man, hey, we should we chat again about what we talked about the other week? And he was like, yeah, we should. And then literally the next week on Monday, I was like, all right. And so, before I even could set something up with him, like a few days later, like that next week on Monday, he comes in and he says, hey, I'm ready. And so to me, that's like both of those working together.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I could go through example after example of individuals in my life that I've witnessed where that's taken place. But I could also tell you of examples where where I've seen you share with somebody and they get saved.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing door-to-door evangelism when I worked here at Beach Haven. We used to take our students out like twice a year and do door-to-door evangelism. And I think half the church thought we were crazy because they're like, door-to-door evangelism doesn't work anymore, right? Because that's what most people think today. And I'll never forget, we were in one of the apartment complexes in Athens and we knocked on a door and a guy came to the door and we shared the gospel and one of my teenagers led him to Christ. And I was like, see? Right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think we have to be careful about saying one does and one doesn't work. They all do, and you better be doing both.
Yeah, they work together.
Yeah.
I think I've heard stories like this before, but I mean, I'm hearing you talk about this student, and can you imagine like this student that's coming to BCM and they're in a small group and they're at gathering and they're meeting with you, and then at the fourth meeting, they're like, hey, like I'm ready. Like I wanna know Christ. Like, can you help me do that? And you share the gospel and you work through that. Whatever. Can you imagine him coming back and saying like, hey, like, why didn't you share that with me at our first meeting?
Right.
Like you had this information. You had this good news. You knew that I needed it. Why didn't you share that?
Because I needed to build enough relational equity for you to hear me. That's why.
Right. But you know, like
that's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane. That's insane. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to see that kid again.
Right.
Right. Like, I don't know if I'm going to see that kid again.
Yeah.
And so, and I mean, I've got the receipt, not the receipts as in what we say in 2025, but the literal receipt sitting over there of the young man that I led to Christ at a Barberitos downtown in Athens. And first time I ever talked to him outside of when I met him here at Beach Haven at a Tacos with Tommy thing. And just a month later, the kid dies in a car wreck, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine, like, had I not shared the gospel, thinking, well, I just need to get to know him for a little while, you know? And so, we have a great responsibility. And I'm excited about our students. I love reading the stories of where they've shared the gospel with their friends. I love reading the stories of where, you know, they've led someone to Christ. UGA is a hard place to do ministry. I don't know that everybody fully grasps that and understands that. Large university campuses, it's tough. It's different because it is such a high-level academic school that even in the midst of seeing some of the shifts that are happening over the last, like, 12 months or so, it's still a large, extremely successful academic school. With influences of all kinds of different things and being told all kinds of crazy things on campus and in classes and so forth. But it's a great mission field. And so we just want to honor that opportunity. And we want to create a culture where people don't just share the gospel at a 2x2 event. They don't just share the gospel at tabling. We want them to share the gospel there. And we believe the more of those program things we do, what's going to happen is if we set them up in a way where it transitions and translates to what they do on a day-to-day basis, that it'll play out in their life. One of my favorite things to do is to read our applications to mission trips and to leadership. And I just read a bunch of applications for our London trip, and we're about to start reading applications for our leadership team. And one of the reasons it's one of my favorite things to do is because one of the questions that's asked in there is, when was the last time you shared the gospel with someone? Mm-hmm. And it's really fun to read those.
Right.
It's really fun to read those. And truth be told, sometimes it also identifies some students that we need to work some more with. And that's okay.
Right.
That's okay. So I'm looking forward to the rest of these next couple of weeks reading those applications as they come in and seeing who's sharing. And if you're hearing this, and especially if you're applying for a leadership team, you might want to go share with somebody, right? Because you got to fill out an application. That's what drives you to share for the first time, and you share for the first time, like, you're going to fall in love with it. Like, that's what's going to happen. And then you're going to share more. So, yeah. Any last thoughts from you guys?
No, I think we covered it.
I think so, too.
All right.
Appreciate y'all listening today. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and hopefully have some more great stories of what the Lord's doing on campus.